Javier did not exist before this episode. What they are about to describe is happening across London as you listen. This is their story. In one of the most deprived constituencies in the country, transport connections that would link communities to central London jobs remain unbuilt while experienced construction workers sit idle. The Department for Transport and HM Treasury cited budget constraints, but the engineers, materials and need all existed in the same place at the same time.
I've been watching cranes build London for 18 years, ever since I left school and picked up my first hard hat. Growing up on the moorings estate in Thamesmead, you learn to notice what gets built and what doesn't. My dad came here from Malaga in the 1980s to work the building sites, and my mum was a teaching assistant at the local primary. They taught me that if you want something done, you start by asking the right questions to the right people. The Elizabeth Line changed everything for me. Watching them carve those tunnels under London, seeing the stations rise up in places that had waited decades for proper transport links, it made me wonder why the same ambition never seemed to reach southeast London. From my flat I can see Abbey Wood Station, where the Elizabeth Line terminates. Canary Wharf is 12 miles away, but getting there by public transport takes an hour and two changes. A DLR extension to Thamesmead would cut that to 25 minutes direct. So in 2019 I started asking why we couldn't have it. First stop was Bexley Council. I presented them with a map showing how a DLR extension could follow the old Dartford Loop railway corridor connecting Thamesmead directly to Woolwich and onward to Bank. The transport officer listened politely and told me, "This is a Transport for London decision. You need to contact TfL directly." TfL took 3 months to respond. When they did, the answer was clear. While we recognise the potential benefits of extending the DLR network, this project is not currently included in our investment programme due to budget constraints from central government. All major infrastructure projects require funding approval from the Department for Transport. So I wrote to the Department for Transport. Their reply came faster, just 6 weeks, but the message was the same. Infrastructure spending must be carefully prioritised within available resources. There is no funding available for new DLR extensions at this time. We must focus on completing existing commitments such as HS2 and the Elizabeth Line. I wasn't ready to accept that. I spent 3 months gathering signatures from neighbours, shop owners, people waiting at bus stops who were tired of the endless journey into central London for work. We collected 3,000 names on a petition calling for a feasibility study, not even the full project, just a study to see if it made sense. My MP arranged a meeting with a Treasury official. I took the petition, my maps, and a folder of evidence showing how many people from Thamesmead were travelling to Canary Wharf and the city for work every day. The official was sympathetic but firm. "I understand your frustration, but you have to understand how government finance works. We cannot afford to spend money we don't have. Every pound spent on transport in one area is a pound not available for hospitals, schools, or other priorities elsewhere. These are difficult choices, but they're necessary." It sounded reasonable. I walked out of that meeting thinking maybe I just didn't understand how tight things really were. Maybe there genuinely wasn't enough money to go around. Maybe wanting a DLR extension was selfish when the NHS was stretched and schools needed funding. Then I walked through Abbey Wood Station on my way home. Next to the Elizabeth Line platforms, there's a big modern building that most people never notice. It's Network Rail's Construction Training Centre, built in 2018 to train workers for the Crossrail project. I'd seen it busy during the height of construction. Dozens of young people learning track installation, signal engineering, tunnel boring techniques, real skills for real jobs. But that day, walking past at 4 p.m. on a Wednesday, the car park was nearly empty. The security guard was locking up early. I asked him what was happening. "All the courses are cancelled," he said. "Been like that for 6 months now, no funding to run them, even though we've got dozens of local lads asking about apprenticeships every week. The equipment's all here, the instructors are still on the books, but the money's not there to actually run the programmes." I stood there looking at this building, purpose-built for training transport workers, sitting half-empty while the Treasury told me there wasn't enough money to build the transport infrastructure that would employ those workers. The contradiction was right there in front of me. If the people existed, and the building existed, and the trainers existed, and the need existed, what exactly was it that there was no money for? The steel to build DLR track gets manufactured in Britain. The concrete gets mixed in Britain. The workers who would build it live in Britain. Many of them in my constituency, many of them unemployed or underemployed. The electricity to run the trains comes from the national grid. The drivers could be trained in that half-empty centre next to Abbey Wood Station. The government that issues the pound was telling me it couldn't find enough pounds to connect these people to this work, but I was looking at a training centre built with government money, equipped with government money, now sitting idle because there was supposedly no government money to use it. That's when I started to understand the Treasury official hadn't been describing a fact about the world. He'd been describing a choice wrapped in the language of impossibility. The government that prints the notes and mints the coins was telling me it had run out of them. The same government that found £895 billion for quantitative easing, that spent £400 billion on COVID support, that writes a cheque to Crossrail every month, was telling me there wasn't enough money for a DLR extension because it had to balance its books like my mum balanced the household budget. But my mum doesn't issue the currency. The government does. I used to accept the excuse that there was no money. I hear it differently now. The government that prints the notes and mints the coins told me it could not find enough of them to train the people who were standing right there ready to work. The real question was never about money. It was about whether the people existed, whether the skills could be taught, whether the materials were available. They were. All of them. The excuse was not a fact. It was a choice wrapped in the language of impossibility. The limit was never the money. The limit was the willingness to spend it into the places and the people who needed it. I still want that DLR extension. I still believe it would transform my community. But now I understand that when someone in Whitehall says there's no money for it, they're not describing a shortage. They're describing a decision. It's the same logic playing out in every constituency where people and needs exist side by side while someone in Westminster says the cupboard is bare.
What Javier experienced has a name, logical fallacy. A logical fallacy occurs when someone makes an argument based on a false comparison or faulty reasoning. For example, saying a goldfish bowl is like the ocean because both contain water ignores the vast differences in size, depth, and complexity. The comparison misleads rather than illuminates. Every time officials told Javier there is no money, they were applying household logic to a currency issuer. Households must earn or borrow before they spend. Governments that issue their own currency spend first, then manage the economic effects. When a household says we cannot afford it, they face a genuine constraint. They need to find existing money. When the UK government says the same thing, it's applying a false analogy. The Treasury treated pounds as though they were a finite resource that had to be carefully hoarded, like a family saving for a holiday. But the Bank of England creates pounds whenever the government needs to spend them. The constraint is not the availability of currency, but the availability of real resources. People, skills, materials, time. In Javier's constituency, those resources were sitting idle. The training centre existed, the unemployed construction workers existed, the steel and concrete suppliers existed. The decision not to connect them was political, not financial. Erith and Thamesmead ranks 108 out of 543 English constituencies in the English Indices of Deprivation 2025, placing it in deprivation decile 2. The constituency has 901 registered charities according to the Charity Commission Register for England and Wales. Total grants received according to 360, giving grant NAV amount to £20 million. All sources are published at blockedbritain.co.uk. Blocked Britain tells the stories of people whose lives are shaped by the gap between what Britain needs and what its institutions choose to provide. Every character is fictional. Every situation is drawn from official statistics. Produced by Blocked Britain.